This is episode 199 of the Focused Mindset Podcast. And in this episode, you get to listen in on a conversation that I had with Louise Diamond. And she is one of the amazing school counselors that we're going to highlight. She's also the author of the book, Creating the Balance, Parenting Through the Middle School Years. And before we get into that, I want to thank you for joining me today. If you're new to this program, don't forget to subscribe, download, make this one of your favorites so you don't miss a single one of our solution-focused, hope-centered podcast designed primarily for educators and parents. This is a time we can get together and just talk about what really matters, what we're noticing in the world. And this is one of a few interviews you're going to have. So before we get into it, let's talk about my TEDx talk. It's available now. I'd love for you to take a listen if you haven't already. It's called How to Lead with Hope, Solution-Focused Conversation Navigation. It's available right now on YouTube. And just to enhance the experience, I created a 3-day challenge that you can get for free on my website, sharekretz.com. And straight to your inbox, you will get special little notes from me to help you along the way of being a solution-focused communicator. So join me there, and don't forget to check the show notes to find out a lot more about what I'm offering and about what Louise Diamond has. And we're about to get into this interview, so let's get started. This is the podcast where you learn how to build stronger connections and have better conversations using the solution-focused approach. I'm Cher Kretz. I'm a school counselor and a solution-focused life coach, and each week we learn new strategies so that we can build our families strong and be the person that we were always meant to be. You can learn more about our products and services by going to thefocusedmindset.com or hop over to Amazon to get 30 days to higher hopes. Oh my gosh, you're going to love this guest. But before we get started, I do have to let you know we had some technical difficulties, so I'm going to ask for your patience. Hang in there. If you notice a few strange breaks or a little bit of weird pauses, I edited the best I could. Sometimes these things happen when we're across the United States. We're talking together, and internet doesn't always cooperate, but there's so much valuable information in this interview that I didn't want you to miss a single second. So here we go. I have a special guest on my show. We're talking to Louise Diamond, and I've been teasing this for a while if you guys follow me on Instagram, because I've been so excited to talk to Louise about middle school kids. Hello, Louise. Welcome.
Hi, Cher. Thanks for having me.
I am so glad we were able to work this out. We're on opposite sides of the United States. I'm over here in California. You're over there in Florida doing the good work of school counseling. And I just feel as though it's been a while since I've had somebody on to talk about the unique age of middle school kids. And so I'm really excited about this conversation. Beforehand, I know you've been doing this work for so long. Tell me a little bit about how you got into counseling and what you're doing.
Okay. Yes, this is my 33rd year as a school counselor. It's hard to believe. I actually took a year off after my second child, but I started in 1990, working in the public schools in South Florida. I worked as a counselor for 5 years in a public elementary school. And then I moved over to a public middle school for 6 years. And then after that, I took a year hiatus after my second baby was born. And then I started working in parochial school, where I've been for 22 years now, where I work with preschoolers all the way to eighth graders. So, which is kind of fun because I get to see them grow up. And I actually am now working with students whose parents used to be my students. So that's kind of fun. It's generational.
Aww.
Yeah. So, you know, it's fun.
That's so sweet.
For a long, long time. I also have two children of my own. I have a son and a daughter who they're both young adults. They recently both graduated from college in the last couple of years. So And why I became a counselor, that is, that's an interesting question. So I, you know, most people have these great stories about how they had a very influential counselor. It used to be guidance counselors back then, that really helped them in school, but that really wasn't my case. I was just really interested in psychology. My bachelor's is in psychology and how the mind works and human behavior. And I was also interested in education and being part of that. And it was also attractive to me, to be honest, the hours and the summers off, and just having that sort of stable consistency in life. And I was very interested in education, but I didn't want to be a teacher. I didn't want to just be kind of in one classroom all day. I wanted more of the global approach, and I wasn't really interested in teaching the academic subjects. I was more interested in getting in their brains and talking to them about, you know, making the choices they make and their feelings and emotions and things like that. Just kind of being able to get in their heads, get into students' heads, and instead of really and interacting instead of putting inputting. So I got into this the role of a school counselor because I was really interested in being part of the educational process, but also being into the mental health part of it a little bit more and the psychology of it. So that's why I became a school counselor. And like I said, I've been doing it since before we had computers. I had a typewriter and a legal pad and a pencil. And it's been a long time. So I've seen a huge evolution in education and with students.
Yeah. I mean, people are the same, but the onset of technology has changed how we approach the students. There's no doubt about it. And you know, we can say, yeah, the basics are still the same. People are people. But it seems to me like, same as you, as I watched through the years, that that we need to approach kids differently because they're approaching their life differently, you know, with their devices and things. So, and I'm very similar as you. I did teach for a while, and I felt like I wanted to be in a lot of places rather than just one classroom. You said that, you know, like one classroom was fine, but it just, I felt like when you're a school counselor, you get to be able to go into all these different environments and pull kids in. It's more of a, I don't know, interactive. It's fun. You know, someone asked me the other day, they're like, how do you stay so excited about your job? Like, you're always seem so excited. And I thought, you don't know how this job keeps you on your toes. You don't really have time to not be excited. Like, there's every day is different. There's no time to be bored. Have you felt that same way?
Every day is different. And it is exciting. It's exhausting sometimes as well, both emotionally and physically.
Yeah.
Because we're kind of always dealing with problems. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't come to us or want us to sit in on a conference because everything is going well. The kid is looking. Everything's going great. There's no conflicts and there's no interesting family dynamics. So when we're included and when we're called and when parents call us, they're often in crisis mode and they may have already tried a few things and they're like, oh my gosh, I need the counselor now.
Right.
So we do deal with a lot of problems. That's kind of what we do. That's when we're called in, not when everything's going well. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why it's interesting to utilize the solution focused approach like I have been, because I feel like if there is any burnout in the field, it's because people do get really worn out at the problems that come at them all the time. And I think that was probably the switch for me, is when I began to say, you know, I'm looking at the problem through the lens of really believing that there's a solution. And it helped my mindset to be able to not feel bogged down by the problem, but to say I'm really seeking out and then helping them illuminate a solution. You know, there is a lot of different things that how we look at it, and we're going to talk more about that as far as even with middle school kids, but
how we approach the situation completely changes. You know, because I have run into counselors that are just going through the motions going, oh my gosh, another problem coming my way. But then sometimes you have those moments where you're like, you know what? I am changing the way they look at their problems. Have you had those moments?
Right. And I kind of look at it as we're trying to put all the pieces of a puzzle together. And
yeah,
I had a teacher say to me, oh my gosh, Louise, I wouldn't want your job. And I'm thinking, gosh, I wouldn't want your job. I think that teachers have a very hard job. But I think what she meant by that was I do get kind of all the crisis, and people call you when a student is having a meltdown or they're in tears in class, or, you know, they unfortunately want to hurt themselves or they're doing something,
yeah,
hurt someone else, and you know how that is. And so we're not dealing with the good stuff all the time. But I do like the challenge of putting the pieces of the puzzle back together and getting in their heads. And a lot of times, mm-hmm, people will say something, you know, about a student like, I don't know what's wrong with him. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to find out.
You know, like, yeah, I love that.
Like, you don't want to say that to a child. What's wrong with you? that will not be good. But
they'd answer you nothing. Nothing, right, is wrong with me.
Fine. And they would do that. But I like getting in their heads and asking those, you know, open-ended questions and challenging their thinking and you know, that cognitive reframing that we do all the time. So I find it as a challenge instead of as a negative.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be at one school for a long time, then you have the other side you talked about where you're able to literally watch kids grow up. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's priceless. I those moments, you're just like, oh, you know, they're just so sweet. But you honed in on the middle school years for your book. And that's really what's interesting to me, because it was way back, I think, in episode, this is episode 196, I think. And it was literally 32, the last time that we talked about middle school. And okay, I had a middle school teacher come on, because she was an epic teacher for my daughter during when we were online. I was so impressed. You know, when we all had to jump online, I was working in the other room, so I could hear all the teachers, and you knew right away the ones that, and I'm sitting here, a counselor in the same district as my daughter is in. So I could hear whether the teachers were getting this online thing or not. And I brought her in because I could tell that she got the middle school mindset. She understood where they were at. They were laying in bed because they were uncomfortable turning on their microphone. They were uncomfortable with people seeing them in their home. And it was harder for other teachers to jump into where that middle schooler was. And I think that's what I love about how your book really begins. And what I'd like to talk to you about is how we look at our kids as they grow older into the middle school years, it really affects how much we enjoy them. And I just thought, I'd love to just hear your perspective on all that.
Well, back when I was working in a public middle school many years ago, it was an inner city middle school. We had about 1,600 students, and there were three of us counselors. And I got a phone call from a mom who had a 13-year-old son in seventh grade. And I wrote about this in my book. She was basically saying she didn't like her son anymore. She couldn't stand to be in the same room with him. She, you know, was basically in tears. She's, I don't know what to do with him. And, you know, then she's told me that this was when he was a baby, she was just in love with him. She couldn't take her eyes off of him. And now, you know, 13 years later, she's in a situation where she just can't stand him. And she said, I love my son, but I don't like him anymore. Mm-hmm. So that got me thinking. At the time, I was a new mom. I was, I guess I was about 32 years old. And I had a son who was an infant or 1 year old. And I thought to myself, my gosh, how do you get this way? Because I was in the infatuation point in my life with being a mother for the first time. And I thought, my gosh, how did this happen? So I started researching and reflecting on her story. And I realized a lot of it had to do with, you know, the developmental changes in children that we all go through and our expectation as parents. So we have to have a change in our mindset. And, you know, to this day, I have parents call me, usually a fifth grader, sixth grader, seventh graders, who call me and they just say, when is this going to end? When am I going to get my sweet baby back? When is this going to be over? And they'll say very desperate things. How am I going to get through this? And I don't know what to do anymore. And they're frustrated and they're at their wit's end. And I think a lot of it, I just sort of validate their feelings and hear them. Because as counselors, you know, we have to listen. We do a lot of listening before we do speaking and just sort of validate their emotions and let them know parenting is hard and raising middle school kids is hard. And we have to try not to take everything personally. So we have to change our way of thinking and our expectations and kind of understand that when your child gets to be, and it's not exactly a, you know, you hit a certain birthday and it happens then for everyone, but usually around 12 years old, they're going to start talking back and they're going to start, you know, figuring out who they are and going through different phases and, expressing themselves in a different way. And they realize they don't want to be little moms and, you know, little use. They want to be themselves and they're trying to figure that out and they don't know yet. And that's okay. And they're not going to be obedient and, you know, that comply with everything. They're going to have ideas of their own and all that is okay. And if we can sort of embrace that and instead of saying things like, you need to do what I say because I said so, which we may have done when they were younger and that was okay. But when they get to be a certain age, we have to parent differently. And we have to have different expectations. And, you know, you've heard the expression, we have to pick our battles. That is true. But we also need to not let them disrespect us or do something that's going to hurt themselves or put them in a situation they're not ready for. So I don't mean that, obviously, that we should just let them do whatever they want because they're going to do it anyway. No, I don't think that at all. They are looking for us for guidance. And parenting, I think, is largely about modeling the appropriate behavior and not just telling them what to do. And instead of saying things like, this is what you should do, or I think you should do this, or why don't you become this, or, you know, we have to reflect and we have to validate who they are and understand sometimes they'll make these grandiose declarations and then an hour later or 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later, they're on to something different. So we can't overreact to everything they say, you know. I go into a great detail about that in the book. But I really feel like it's a good time to let them figure out who they are. And I'm really, really into extracurricular activities in middle school. Because when your children are little, we kind of put them in activities. We sign them up for ballet lessons or Little League. Or I know soccer is really popular, or, you know, things like that. And then they get to be, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10. They don't want to do it anymore. They want to do something else. So I do think it's good to let them explore who they are and let them figure that out. Because if they tell you, I don't want to play soccer anymore, or I don't want to do karate anymore, that's okay. But I do think they need to have to channel their energy and have a passion. And the kids that are, they seem to get in less trouble. And now trouble includes too many hours on screens, are the kids that have a passion for something outside of school. hopefully school is a passion, but it isn't always, but at least that they're doing school and they're approaching their education in a positive way. But I think extracurricular activities are very important. I think building relationships with kids at this age is crucial. Have those hard conversations before they get a girlfriend or boyfriend, before they start dating, before they start driving. Build those relationships, because if you have those relationships, high school is easier. Those teen years are easier because your kid will be more inclined to open up to you, and they want you involved in their lives. So I know that's, I've simplified middle school right there, but I go in my book, I go into great detail about, you know, different areas of parenting middle schoolers. And it also has a lot of information about what is normal and what isn't normal. And what I mean by that is maybe when you need to get professional help for your child, either medically or, you know, a psychologist or a psychiatrist. So, it kind of gives parents a little frame of reference based on, you know, a lot of years of working with middle schoolers.
I mean, so your book, I don't even know if I said the title, Creating the Balance, Parenting Through the Middle School Years. It's available on Amazon. We'll talk more about it later. But it's really great that you had that moment back when you first became a counselor, because you were in that unique situation where you have this little child and you're working with middle schoolers. Most everyone does not have that experience when they're looking at their little baby. So you had that aha moment where you were like, wait a minute, there's something here. There's something that changes as they grow up. And what is it? And the fact that you've pinpointed that and then put a lot of pointers in it along the way, I think is invaluable, because it's not, we say it all the time. You know, you're not born and they give you a manual for parenting. Sure, we can go out there and research and find our resources, but it's not like we're born and they say, oh, by the way, you're really going to start hating your kids around 12, 13, you know? And then, you know, they don't send you home with that knowledge so you can have any kind of heads up. It just happens. You know, their hormones hit. And I think you explained it beautifully to where they're colliding with who they want to be. And it's kind of like they look at their parents as getting in the way of that.
Yeah, that's,
you know, true. They kind of are like, oh, you're getting in the way of my independence here. And it's like, wait a minute, I'm here, you're here because of me. And then it's like, and then the battle occurs, you know,
right,
the swords come out and the battle occurs. Yeah. So I think that's exactly how people perceive it, is what you said, where people say, you're just telling me that I need to concede, but you're not. You're saying you need to understand where they're at developmentally. That's a huge shift.
I think that's key. I mean, there's a huge difference between a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old. Huge. And even in childhood, 6 months is an enormous amount of time. I mean, I see the evolution of kids go through the different stages of middle school. So it's usually 6th, 7th, and 8th. And in my case, they're in the same school. So they're not necessarily going into a big middle school from a smaller elementary school, although I have worked in that situation as well. But I think 6th grade is when it, you know, they kind of start and they change, and, you know, the girls are taller than the boys, and they go through a little bit of an awkward stage. And then in 7th grade, even from the beginning of the school year in August to like now, you see the kids changing. And then in 8th grade, they change even more.
And they're really little. They're in 2nd grade, they like can't wait to see us, you know, as counselors. And then we consider when we walk into that same child years later and they're like, oh no, I'm good, you know, but they're not good. They actually do want to talk to you, but they're so upset. They're a little obsessed about how people are going to view them and how their friends look at them. And I think it's easy for us as counselors to be like, oh, how cute is that? They're changing. But it's not so easy for parents to look at it like that, is it?
No, it can be really, really frustrating. So I have a kind of a little funny story. So at my school, I stand at the front gate in the morning and I have almost 600 students. So I say good morning, you know, several hundred times. And it's, I always kind of chuckle because maybe 10% of the kids say good morning back, or maybe a little bit of eye contact or a grunt. And a lot of the younger children will say something like, "Oh, Mrs. Diamond, I like your dress," or, "Oh, I like your glasses," or whatever. And it's so cute. And then the middle school kids, they don't even look at you. It's like you are invisible. And, you know, these same kids who came in my office to talk my ear off 3-4 years ago are now like, they won't even look up. They come in and they're on their phone, you know, and they won't even look at you. And I kind of chuckle because I just keep saying, good morning, good morning, good morning. And they don't greet me. But all of that is just the age and what they're going through and that their peers are so important to them. But for parents, I kind of remind them that this is a great time to remember grades are not the most important thing. They don't, you know, as long as the effort is there and they're building good work ethic and maybe study skills and good habits, that is more important than the grade. Because colleges, if they're going to college, they don't look at your middle school transcript unless maybe you have a dual enrollment class. But other than that, that'll be on the high school transcript. But they don't look at middle school report cards. It doesn't really matter if they forget their homework in fourth grade, you know? So I think it is a good idea. And we all want to kind of fix things for our kids and rescue our kids, but let them fail. And they learn more from failure than they do from success. If you just always get everything and you always win everything, you're really not learning a lesson. I mean, if you think about that in our lives, the biggest growth comes after failure, and people who are very successful failed a lot to get there. So the message is just to encourage your kids to keep going. They can change courses, they can change paths, but just to keep going and learn from their failures. And also, one of the big things I've noticed is friendships change in middle school. Maybe the kids that were your best friends in elementary school, you just don't have that much interest, common interests with them anymore. And that's okay. That is okay. When kids were little, another thing I hear a lot from parents is they want their middle school kids to be friends with the children of their friends. And sometimes they're not. And that's okay too. Maybe now they don't like them anymore, or they just don't want to be around them anymore. They feel the pressure. So they want to make their own friendships, and they're trying to figure out who they are, and their relationships are a huge part of that. And they still need parental guidance. So, you know, that's why I called my book Creating the Balance, because it is about parenting is a huge balance. I mean, that's what it is. It's figuring out when to speak and when not to speak, to back off and when to jump in. But my point is to try not to fix things for them and rescue. If they forget their homework, what's going to happen? You know, are they going to fail the grade? Don't run home and bring it back. You know, let them experience the consequence of it. Let them serve the detention or whatever. You know, don't go in and fight their battles for them, and understand they're not always telling us as parents everything. They're not. Trust me, they're not.
Yeah, it's because they want their parents to see the very best version of them, so they're going to create that best version of them to tell a parent.
And that is human nature.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, you know.
Don't Most we people, do the same thing? Like, what, are we going to walk into our boss and tell him about the failures we did? I doubt it, you know?
Right.
You know?
that.
Right, right. I think that that's it too. Like, oh, well, they lied. They didn't tell me the full story. Well, maybe they're just, that's part of their autonomy as well. They're like, you know, maybe I don't need to tell the full story here, you know? And so,
yeah.
It's crazy though, because I find that with all of that being so true, they still need their parents, and their parents need to know that without the good morning, you know, without the same feeling that they used to have. Like, the parents need to just know it in their heart that they need them, and they don't need to have that validation during that time of their life so much, because they might not notice it. You know, that's what's coming up to me as I'm thinking about what you're telling us.
Exactly. And it's okay. You know, it's okay to meet them on their terms for a lot of it. You know, maybe not everything. Maybe there's something you need them to do, like go visit their grandparents or whatever. Don't make everything a battle. But it's okay to kind of meet them on their own terms and hear them and listen to them instead of always talking at them. And take those opportunities that are just those small things, like you're driving them to practice in the car and they've got the headphones on. Maybe have a little, take the headphones out for 10 minutes and have a conversation and listen to them. How was your day? And they may say nothing, you know, how was school? Fine, you know, all that, what they do, you know.
Yep.
But just to hear them, because some kids may take that opportunity, and whatever they're talking about, listen. If they're talking about their sports team or their drama tryouts or, you know, their friend, what their friend had for lunch, whatever it is, listen to that story, because it may lead to something very important instead of getting our questions in, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, what about this? And what about the English test? And what about that? You know, hear what they're saying, and it kind of resists the temptation of, you know, the Inquisition. And I'm guilty too. Oh my gosh. We all do it. But I'm just saying that in terms of
That's such good advice.
The kids are telling me, you know, my parents don't listen. They often say that to me, and they'll tell me something really juicy, and I'll say, oh, did you tell your mom that? And they're like, oh, I can't talk to her. But they can talk to me because I'm just the objective, you know, and I'm not their mom. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's important to take those little opportunities, whether you're folding the laundry or you're emptying the dishwasher, you know, those little things in the house that you're just doing that you have to do. And your kid comes in and wants to talk, turn off the TV, get off the phone, and hear them, even if it means to stop what you're doing and hear what they're saying. So take every opportunity you can to build those relationships during middle school, because once they get in high school, they're going to date, they're going to drive, they're going to want to do all kinds of things that we never thought of when they were 12. So, you know, get ready for that. So
my book is called Creating the Balance, Parenting Through the Middle School Years. And it's 15 chapters on different aspects of raising middle school kids. It's largely based on school issues. It talks about preparing for middle school, finding the right school. It has a lot of information about how to navigate home issues, school issues. It talks about getting ready for high school, just peers and when to get professional help, just all kinds of issues dealing with this age group from about 10 to 14 years old. I kind of wanted it to be a reference guide, so you could read one chapter if something comes up, you know, and then go, or you can read it cover to cover from beginning to end, or you could just, you know, use it as a reference guide for something specific if you're struggling with one aspect of parenting. And it's just, it's really written from a down to earth perspective, and just as a mom and a counselor, and kind of like just me talking to the, or, you know, having a conversation, that kind of thing. It's very,
yeah, I mean, practical. It's kind of like the emails that you would send out, which I think is so cool. It's kind of like, you know, here's what you would send out if you were like, hey, my parents need to know this. And then you just get it out there. So it's like, it feels personal, which I really like. I love it.
Thank you. And that was my approach. And a lot of it is recycled things that I have used as a counselor.
Yeah.
For
you're like, this was good. It needs to get out there. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just kind of a long form of it. Absolutely. But it's available on Amazon, and you can follow me. I have two Instagram accounts, School Counseling Balance. School Counseling Balance is for educators and where I connect with school counselors. And Middle School Parenting is my parenting account. And I also have a website. It's Louise Hajar Diamond, LOUISEHAJJAR Diamond, DIAMOND.com. And that's it.
Yeah. And also, any of you that go on Teachers Pay Teachers, you have a ton of cool resources over there as well, right?
Oh, thank you. Yes, I do have Teacher Pay Teacher, a store on Teachers Pay Teachers. It's called School Counseling Balance. And I have some resources from pre-K to eighth grade, you know, parenting resources. I also have some simple lessons that I've used over the years. I've never really had a curriculum, so I wrote everything. So it's just very simple. Most of them are 1 to 2 pages long, very practical. And there are some that are free, so handouts if you need them, on the Teacher Pay Teacher store.
Yeah, I so appreciate that, because we're all in this together. And I think that, you know, we just need to be able to have a heart to say that it's not easy being a parent. It's not easy. It helping kids in this age group, no matter what, you know, or whether you're a principal, teacher, you know, anybody. And so sometimes we just have to sit back and say, you know what, let's help each other out. Let's be in this together. And I really feel like you give that vibe to all of us. And I want to say thank you for doing that, because I know we need that so much.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's just, no one has all the answers, and we're all in this together, like you said, and parenting is hard, and sometimes we need to take a little break and a little breather and support each other, because it is a rocky road, and there's no one size fits all for any of it. So
yeah.
It's knowing your kid and doing what you need to do in the moment.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, get the book. Anybody who's listening, it's just good for a reference. I'm so glad that I have it. And I've already referred it to a couple of my sixth grade parents just this week. It's a perfect time to reach out and get a little extra guidance, you know, rather than leaning on our own maybe emotional state at the time, or everything that our kid says, getting, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, my child's upset. Ah, you know, and it just kind of gives us some peace. So I appreciate it a lot. And, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for school counselors out there or educators, if you send me a private message on Instagram, I can send you some flyers for the book. And they're great for parent-teacher conferences, you know, parent nights, things like that. So if you're interested, I will send you some free flyers.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, this has been so cool. I mean, I just have been wanting to get together with you for a while, since we've both kind of been friends on Instagram. So hopefully we'll be able to meet face to face at a conference, or we'll come together somewhere.
That would be great.
Are you going to the national conference this year?
I haven't thought about it yet. My school doesn't pay for it at all. Oh. I would like to do one day. It definitely is on my professional bucket list.
Well, it always comes up in the summer, which is great. You know, I mean, we have a lot going on in the summer too. It's our time, right?
Right.
So, but yeah, thank you so much. And I'm glad that we can just both kind of now be joining together ourselves on both on opposite sides of the United States, just doing this work. And yeah, anybody who wants to reach out, whether you're a counselor and you want to DM, and even the parents, you know, I'm sure they can DM you and just kind of get that extra added support. And I guess it's time for us to say goodbye. We'll have to get together in a few years and talk about a new subject.
Thank you so much, Cher.
Of course.
Okay,
you too.
Bye. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Focused Mindset Podcast. And right now, you can hop over to Amazon and pick up your copy of 30 Days to Higher Hopes. But if you want to do something for yourself that's absolutely free, then take my 3-day Lead with Hope challenge. This is the way that leaders all over the place are learning to focus on hope and learning how the power of hope can move people to lasting change. And you join the challenge by heading over to my website at thefocusedmindset.com, where you can also learn about my coaching services. And if you would like to support this podcast, there's a few ways to do that. One, feel free to leave a review. I love reading those. And also, become a Patreon by clicking the link in my show notes, because it's listeners like you that help this podcast grow and helps me reach more people with a message of focusing on hope. So until next time, live solution focused.